The Fifth Floor, written and read by Alan Crowther. Every day I commuted to the heart of the Central Business District, where, in the foyer of the company's headquarters, I made my way up the lift to the fifth floor. It was a quiet, agreeable place, particularly since the previous June. That's when management laid off an entire three departments. In just 1 year, it had become soundless but for the hum of desktop PCs, the occasional chirp of a telephone, and, of course, the interminable tapping of my keyboard as I compiled spreadsheets for the project managers. Having been the sole survivor of the cutbacks, it was with great honour that I remained a contributing member of the Holbrook Analysis and Data Investigations family. I'd worked in the field my whole life, and evidently possessed a valuable skill set. With my quiet temperament, the role also kept me in my comfort zone. There were no meetings, stakeholder liaisons, or bothersome co-workers, just the steady, uninterrupted flow of tabulations and research maps. My job's requirements were simple. Every morning, I dial the extension of a project manager upstairs, and he'd assign me spreadsheets requiring my attention. Data cleaning and coding were my first and only priorities, and, given my penchant for efficiency, were often completed ahead of deadline. The secret to my perspicacious accomplishments lay in the cultivation of a strict daily regimen. I took strategically coordinated breaks, such as a 2-minute window for making an instant coffee, or increased my KPIs for the sheer thrill of the challenge. Positive reinforcement was crucial. I often rewarded productivity by treating myself to a discarded newspaper from a waste paper basket and selecting an article to read. Engineering such new and innovative techniques helped me maintain focus. I had to honor my position as the company's sole datamatics clerk and worked tirelessly, never leaving the general vicinity of my desk, except, of course, for my trips to the men's room to relieve myself. I trained my body, or had it trained itself, to 4 daily bathroom breaks. I conducted a post-coffee defecation at 9:45 a.m. and urinations at 12:30 p.m., 2 p.m. and 4:30 p.m., even using the urinal closest to the door to shave off extra milliseconds. Of all the improvements made, this one I was most satisfied with because it indicated that personal growth could be found in even the most unexpected of places. With the former staff long gone, the fifth floor was a sobering reminder of what lay in store for those who couldn't pull their weight. The layoffs had happened swiftly and suddenly, with private security officers escorting redundant workers off the premises. One can never predict the trials and tribulations that lay ahead in the seasons of one's career, but my dedication to self-improvement showed that I was ready for anything. Or so I thought. One Tuesday afternoon, I entered the men's room for my second toilet visit of the day, utilizing the urinal closest to the door. While relieving myself, gently pushing in order to return to my desk quicker, I began to contemplate the sound of my stream jetting against the domed grate. As the last of my urine trickled down the plug hole, I found myself contemplating the untold megaliters of piss that had passed through these very pipes over the years, imagining every single urination to ever have taken place at this receptacle, approximating the hours, minutes, and seconds that had passed with someone standing in my very position. I imagine this data being scaled into various pie charts, density maps, and scatter plots, and by the time I'd stirred from these thoughts, I realized that I'd been staring vacantly at the tiled walls, cock in hand, for some 5 minutes. Unsettled, I hurried back to my desk. The specter of disruption worked its way into my shifts, slowly but surely chipping away at everything I'd worked so hard to create. I found myself anxiously biting my fingernails and forming the discarded pieces into a neat pile. As the collection grew, I stockpiled them in a tin box originally used for storing paperclips. Within weeks, I was so committed to this task that I even began picking and peeling off my toenails right there in the office. My productivity continued to slip, until I eventually had to commit to unpaid overtime, often remaining on the fifth floor until 7 in the evening just to finish the day's required tasks. On one occasion, I found myself phoning a project manager, a duty I dreaded, and formulated justifications for this unprecedented decline. 1494 Seneca, my biggest project to date, was already 4 days behind schedule, and I anticipated a devastating fallout. Despite such grim developments, I toiled onwards, tapping out spreadsheet after spreadsheet, the glow of my computer drying my eyes out and wearing me down. In the north-facing corner of the fifth floor, I discovered a cemetery of obsolete computers and broken telephones. It was here that I laid a sleeping bag between the shelves, and in a metal locker stored clean underwear, spare trousers, and a shopping bag filled with instant ramen purchased from a nearby convenience store. With deadlines looming, it seemed like the natural thing to do. With time and discipline, I'd get back on my feet. Not all careers could be a bed of roses. After all, they call it work for a reason. I reassured myself that this was merely a phase, and, with time, I'd be resuming my old routine once more. Throughout my secret sleepovers, I managed to remain completely cocooned from other staff members. With the building more or less empty after 6 p.m, I used the evenings to unwind, strolling up and down the various floors, perusing the desks of absent employees. I consumed chocolate bars stashed in the back of drawers, read over personal emails, and masturbated over family photos. I even made my way into the tiers of upper management, appreciating their generous selection of gourmet coffee, batik handwash, and panoramic views of the city. The many corridors, staff rooms, and storerooms of the Holbrook Analysis and Data Investigations offices were free to explore, providing me with a rejuvenating period of downtime before returning to the fifth floor to sleep. One Saturday morning, while shaving in the men's room, I sensed that my attempt at atonement was working. A 2-week stretch of overtime had ensured that much of the neglected work had been completed, and if I was to maintain such productivity, I'd very likely drive the outcome across the finish line. A smile of delight spread across my face. 1494 Seneca would be a success. Once again, this unassuming clerk pulls through as the quiet achiever, the company's go-to guy for all of your datamatics needs. Just bring the spreadsheets to me, and it will be done. But no sooner had my celebration begun than the men's room door swung open, and in walked a strange-looking fellow. He was gaunt, wore a shirt, tie, and suit jacket. His lower half was bare, but for a pair of satin boxer shorts and grey business socks, the welts drooping around his bony calves. We locked eyes, and he froze in his tracks. "What are you doing in here?" he muttered. Having never been caught out by another staff member, I too was dumbstruck. "I'm a busy man," I announced, "and I have lots of very important work to do."
"Is that so?"
He scratched the stubble on his chin before setting a toiletries bag down on the basin beside me. "And what about you?" I asked. "What brings you here bright and early on a Saturday morning?" The man produced toothpaste and a brush.
"I've been brought in to fix a few things. You might say I'm something of a consultant."
"I know the feeling," I said, rinsing my hands. "What have they got you on?" He faced me with his drooping, tired eyes.
"Why, it's 1494 Seneca," he said. "It's in dire need of attention."
1494 Seneca? Rinsing his mouth, he gave a cursory nod and spat into the basin.
"The deadline's a month from now, and if the current rate's anything to go by, the company will be another client short by the end of financial year. So it's clean and code and clean for me."
I felt my stomach drop. The man smirked, our eyes meeting in the mirror.
"And what is it you do?"
"Oh, you know, this and that," I said with a shrug. "This and that and a few things in between." The man produced a comb and delicately tidied up his thinning brown hair. I'd never seen his photograph on any of the company newsletters, yet his demeanor was far too relaxed to be that of a temp in the Holbrook Data Analysis and Investigations team. There was something very wrong about this situation, compounded by the fact that he was meddling with tasks that were meant to be my domain entirely. "How long have you worked here for?" I asked.
"I'm rusted until March, but I'm optimistic that will change to a more permanent arrangement."
It seemed ludicrous that our paths had only just crossed.
"And when do you take your breaks?" He lowered his comb, and our eyes met once more.
Breaks,
he scoffed. You've got to be kidding me. He tossed the comb onto the bench and shuffled across the tiles before settling in front of the urinal closest to the door. By the time I returned to my desk, my whole body was trembling. How had it happened that I was ignorant to the presence of another datamatics clerk? My hand shook with such ferocity that I attempted my password 4 times before entering it correctly. Had this development simply passed me by, or had it been withheld from my knowledge? I was outraged, almost to the point of phoning a project manager to really give them a piece of my mind, but I restrained myself. Such outbursts would almost certainly prove to be detrimental. There were, it seemed, greater machinations at play. I needed to calm down and give the situation some rational thought. It all seemed so preposterous that a man had remained hidden on the 5th floor, toiling away on a secret terminal, possibly aware of my existence, yet concealing his own. Could it be that the imposter in the bathroom, this mysterious usurper, was the real force behind my renewed productivity? Did he intend for his output to rival that of mine? Should this be the case, it was the crafty move of a corporate rapscallion whose very presence was hazardous to my own. And breaks. He claimed that he didn't take them. Well, if this cunning git was going to play it that way, then I too would adopt a no-breaks regiment. Furthermore, I'd engineer all new radical changes to my working day, ensuring that my productivity would rise with a gradient so utterly shocking that this dubious son of a whore would be left in the dust where he belonged. From there on out, I no longer consumed coffee. It was off limits because it only guaranteed more time wasted on the toilet. Liquid intake would be restricted to tap water. At the beginning of my shift, I'd consume several liters of it before disallowing any further liquids for the remainder of the day. I was attempting, via experimental methods, to stretch out my bladder capacity. A bigger bladder meant less bathroom breaks, and less bathroom breaks meant more productivity. Such advances would surely reflect tremendously on my efforts. Through the morning and the early afternoons, I held on tight, fighting the urge to piss. So intense was this urge that my work pace quickened. As the hours passed and the tension rose, my kidneys crippled with pain. Occasionally, I padded my underwear with toilet paper to prevent any visible leaks. This new investigative process went on for a week, settling new records daily until I accomplished an all-new personal best. A first piss break at 2 p.m. The agonizing final hour was spent hunched over my keyboard, sucking down breaths till I sprinted into the men's room. There, the relief was so phenomenally intense that my hands and knees quivered, causing me to slump against the wall in order to remain upright. Piss jetted against the urinal with such force that the crotch of my trousers became a round patch of dampness. I was overcome with a sense of repose so delightful that I found myself rampant with excitement. I bent my erection downwards and without hesitation pushed the stainless steel dome aside, plunged my cock into the warm liquid within. Several thrusts were all it took before I ejaculated all over my shirt front. Some half an hour later, slumped over the urinal, I awoke from a pleasant reverie, my mouth drooling against the tiled walls. Uncharted levels of excitement wound me up into a frenzy. There was a sudden need to accommodate for this unexpected vault in productivity. I branched out into additional fields as a sort of celebration of my demonstrable advancements. My days commenced with brisk walks up and down the surrounding streets. I lurked outside of neighboring buildings and waited for employees to make their exit. Upon slipping through the doors, I explored as many toilets as time allowed, reviewing and rating them in an exercise pad and re-entering the data into spreadsheet form upon returning to my desk. The toilets were rated according to their various features, scents, styles, and comfort levels. The results of the first week favored the 3rd-floor toilets of a nearby legal aid office. The unpaid volunteers lived off dross pilfered from supermarket dumpsters and left behind a fecal stench reminiscent of garden waste. I became obsessed with lunch break visitations and would go there to defecate, masturbate, or otherwise just loiter. The following week, my new haunt was the 12th-floor toilet of a major financial institution, which featured an adjoining disabled access cubicle, likely used by a senior staff member.
I enjoyed visiting after their Wednesday afternoon squash sessions because the unventilated room reeked of body odors flavored like canned dog food or spoiled kebabs. On one afternoon, I brought in a deflated wheelchair tire to chew on as I sodomized myself with the end of a toilet brush, keeping one bare foot submerged in the bowl water. After a security guard chased me from the foyer of Stanley Informatics and Business Intelligence, a competitor company, I made a hurried jog back to the office, passing a burning bin on a street corner. The acrid fumes drew me toward the flames. Behind the hot iron grates, I caught sight of a plastic bag filled with dog shit, and my cock instantly hardened, poking through my crotch. I felt a sudden urge to collect as many cigarette butts as I could from the gutter, and by the time I'd returned to my desk, my ash-blackened hands clutched a Ziploc bag containing the remains of some 50-odd butts. Unable to resume my work, I phoned the project manager and informed him that I was ill, and upon hanging up the phone, huffed on the bag continuously before drifting into a deep sleep. Work went on, day and night. I abandoned my flat west of the city and ignored all incoming calls on my mobile phone, most of which were either from my landlord or an unidentified number that I assumed belonged to a law enforcement agency. Between the administration of spreadsheets, I amused myself endlessly with fantasies of secret corporate piss cults forming within the city, public defecation squadrons, and steam lodges designed purely for collecting and bottling human sweat. I indulged in putting these repugnant dreamscapes to paper, turning them into various short stories, which I distributed to every single contact on my email and social network accounts. Sure, I was the shy guy. Every office has one. But I'd risen up the ranks to become the maestro, who'll whip together all of your datamatics needs in an instant, dazzling the clients, the team player, the one who's not afraid of putting in the hard yards, the individual who constantly seeks new challenges. I attached my pornographic stories to emails marked for the company's clients. I even sent them reviews of their own office toilets, featuring statistical summaries and cutting-edge analysis. I suggested that raw meat be hung from bathroom lights until it grows spores that slowly cover the walls like festering, landlocked barnacles. Possibly, began another of my notes, we could create a bathroom jar collection, each vessel containing secretly gathered farts, with prizes awarded to those who successfully guessed which staff members expelled them. Or perhaps the plumbing could be altered to divert all raw sewage waste to the basement car park, which would in turn be hired out on weekends for functions or children's birthday parties. It was a successful week, an inspired journey. Creative synergies were circling back. I felt future-proofed. In this ever-changing world, I was one of the lucky ones. And luck, as they say, is where opportunity meets preparation. Late one evening, sitting at my terminal with a bowl of ramen in my lap, I busily amended several days of work which I'd erroneously submitted. The protective calm of the fifth floor was disturbed by a distant racket. Somewhere on the other side of the building came the din of metal, a sound akin to the lonely clang of a blacksmith toiling in some faraway workshop. I rose from my seat and crept across the office, diverging from the familiar territory of the datamatics department and through the aisles of empty workstations. I rounded corner after corner until I discovered the blue glow of a computer monitor. A terminal had been wired up beneath the desk. Beside it lay a sleeping bag. There were socks, food wrappers, and apple cores scattered across the floor. I kneeled down, eager to investigate the contents of the computer. On the desktop were dozens of shortcuts to network drives and files, many of which were various iterations of 1494 Seneca. Upon opening these files, I found that page after page of work that I'd previously completed, work that dated as far back as a month, had been bastardized into incomprehensible gibberish. The worthless wretch who secretly camped here was vying for my position, and if that weren't somehow insulting enough, he'd taken to spending his evenings pillaging and befouling all of my hard work. As my investigation continued, it became clear that a disaster of considerable magnitude was on the horizon. There was a hidden backup folder in which the imposter had saved my correctly coded work as his own, no doubt as a sort of nest egg which he could use to impress the project managers. It was clear that when the day of calamity finally arrived, my nemesis intended to swoop down and offer these files to save the day. While private security officers would escort me from the foyer, this contemptible bastard would be living a dream of vainglorious accomplishment. As I approached the southern corner of the fifth floor,
The clanking grew louder. The stairwell door had been wedged open, and a blaze of fluorescent light spilled onto the carpet. Suspended from the handle was a hanger, a suit jacket, and slacks placed neatly across its frame. I padded my way into the light until I was able to peer down the staircase, and that's when I saw him. Wearing only his boxer shorts and grey business socks was the gaunt man from the bathroom. He clutched a large red fire extinguisher, raised it above his head, and slammed it down into the cement wall. Chunks of rock scattered down the steps as dust rose in gentle curls. He exhaled slowly, deliberately, raising the extinguisher back up over his head before smashing it into the wall once more. A small crumbling mouth had been hammered through the wall, barely wide enough to crawl through. As I edged closer, eager to see where this cavity led, the man turned to me with an icy glare.
What are you doing in here? I asked.
He placed his hands on his hips.
You might say that I possess a terrible affliction. And while it disturbs me, you've given me no choice but to move onto Plan B.
I'm not sure I understand. The man jammed his eyes shut, his face tightening until his skin turned a deep turnip red. His eyes shucked open, and he sucked down air in a startled panic.
All right, you got me, he announced with a shrug. I'm looking for buried treasure. In my downtime, I've grown fond of browsing the old company newsletters. Did you know that if you go back in the archives, way back, you can find entries that make reference to the Compendium Omnia?
What's the Compendium Omnia? He shook his head with a chuckle.
Only the rarest manual in the entire history of data investigations. It contains the most esoteric arrangements of numbers known to mankind. The world's first data frame, authored by holy statisticians, clerks who were said to commune with angels.
What does it do? I asked.
What does it do? He scoffed. This volume is more than just a holy book. It's a shortcut to get, you know.
He raised a finger, pointing it up at the ceiling. And this book, you say, it's hidden in the walls. The man nodded solemnly.
If you help me find it, he said furtively, I'll let you share it with me.
He raised his finger to the ceiling again, as if this was our little secret. It was clear to me that in pursuit of my ruination, this man had inflicted a great deal of psychological damage to himself. Not only had he abandoned the duties and responsibilities incumbent upon a datamatics clerk, possibly violating several regulatory laws in the process, he'd abandoned all sense of reason and rationale. If it weren't for the simple fact that both our jobs were on the line, I'd have made plans to phone human resources first thing in the morning and inform them, with utmost confidentiality, that a co-worker of mine was in need of private counsel and could do with a referral to some of the support services on offer to staff. The man picked up his fire extinguisher and resumed his battering. I crept back into the darkness until he was concealed by the stairs and the clouding dust. As I made my way back across the floor, I pondered the madness that had been on display. He seemed more of a danger to himself than anyone else. While his conduct was eccentric, to say the least, it seemed unlikely that it would result in the devastating consequences I'd initially anticipated. No, that strange man was a threat to no one and could be left to function at his own free will. With time, the project managers would be alerted to his bizarre conduct and undoubtedly terminate him on the spot. And those were the final thoughts to pass through my mind before everything went black and a brand new world of suffering began. Deep in the void, it felt as if time had stopped. I'd lost awareness of my own existence, thinking and feeling nothing but for a stuffy sense of confinement. Then came the pain, a persistent throbbing on the back of my head. At some point, between bouts of nausea and stinging, I became aware of a heinous stench, one that was profoundly familiar. It was the smell of decades worth of microwaved lunches, of sour milk, ammonia, and rat bait. On the edge of this blackness, I spotted a grid of some dozen or so white dots. It appeared to be a light source. As my vision adjusted, I could scarcely make out the plyboard and plaster just inches above my head. Movement was possible only by wriggling, and with great difficulty, I squirmed my way toward the light. It was none other than a ventilation plate. Furry dust quivered along its grill. Beyond it, I could just make out a wall clock that read 9:30. Somewhere, a telephone rang, and I was racked by a tremendous realization that I had been immured behind the walls of the 5th floor. Evidently, I was an hour late for work. Perhaps that call was regarding me, the fluctuating nature of my contributions, the unsettling errors contained in 1494 Seneca, my absence from my terminal. I imagined the gaunt man grassing on me, informing the project managers of my absenteeism. That cretinous rogue. He must have stalked me on my journey back, creeping along one of the empty aisles before striking a blow to my head with that cumbersome metal tank. I must have been out cold for hours, giving him ample time to drag my unconscious body through the hole before sealing me inside. Trapped in the wall cavities, sleep came and went. I often woke up to an intense tickling sensation as dozens of cockroaches commuted around my body. Here in the void, I was an uninvited guest and decided it was time to acquaint myself with another area altogether. Moving deeper into the blackness, I reached an area where the ceiling rose by 3 feet. At last, I could sit my aching body upright and stretch my limbs. It was here that I discovered a most unusual arrangement. A PVC pipe protruded from the wall, inclined at such an angle that it pointed onto a burgundy cushion. Fluorescent light radiated from the end of the pipe as a bead of liquid dripped from its edge with a frail glimmer. Somewhere beyond the walls, I sensed activity, the creak of a door. Footsteps, a neurotic muttering. What followed seemed self-explanatory. I laid on my back, rested my head against the cushion, and stared up through the pipe, curious as to what all the fuss was about. I could just make out the ribbed cover of a fluorescent light. If I squinted my eyes, I also could see what appeared to be tiled walls. There came a squeak of footsteps, and the light was eclipsed by a shadow. Then came the clink of a belt buckle, the zip of a fly being lowered. And as my sight adjusted, I realized what was happening. It was the office rogue, his ice-cold eyes staring down the urinal hole and into the darkness where I lay. He let out an amused chuckle as he produced his cock and commenced pissing into the urinal closest to the door, the very structure under which I lay recumbent. Urine cascaded from the pipe and onto my face. I spluttered as it ran up my nose, stinging my eyes. With a choke, I bolted upright and slammed my head against the pipe, severing it from its fitting. The pipe rattled away into the darkness, and in its absence, the stream became a violent deluge, squirting in every direction like a vandalized hydrant. In my disoriented state, I had no choice but to slump onto my back and wait for this rancid torrent to reach its end. When the piss subsided, intermittent drips and drops fell from the ceramic conduit above. I gasped and spat, wincing at the bitter taste in my mouth. There came a muffled chuckle, and when I peered through the urinal hole, I saw the rogue peering down at me. The triumphant grin.
"You've had your fun, and you've made your point," I pleaded, wiping my eyes. "Now it's time to let me out."
The man snorted.
"Let you out? After all the effort it took to get you in there?"
"You really have no choice," I said, attempting to scrounge a sense of credibility. "You've got no choice because if you don't, well, people will start to look for me."
"I doubt you know anybody at all. And even if you did, why would they wonder such a thing?" he said. "They just think you're at work. You're always at work. But it's a wonderful relief, isn't it, to just disappear?"
At that, he pulled up his trousers and trundled out the door. It appeared that I was in very serious trouble, perhaps more trouble than I could ever have conceived of. The place behind the walls became my new abode, a strange damp world that I shared with vermin. After hours, when the ventilation system was shut down, I sought warmth against the wall that separated a hot water furnace. With my belly pressed against the plyboard, I could sleep in relative peace, even growing accustomed to the roaches, rats, and mice as they wandered by. My main priority was finding sustenance, and while I could smell the decaying remains of foodstuffs out there in the office, I was forced to find new resources. I learned the routes of cockroaches, and after locating their hangouts, became a rather fierce bug hunter, sometimes able to catch 2 or 3 at a time by cupping them in my hands and sucking them into my mouth, eating them alive. My life of captivity ran parallel to that of the office rogue. Occasionally, I caught glimpses of his gaunt frame through various ventilation grills, observing him in his natural, demented state. He'd scull down company-supplied milk, or return from other floors with armfuls of lunches, pilfered from break-room fridges. I even witnessed him eating my instant ramen. That really put a spring in his step. He scissored open flavor sachets while giving a running commentary as if he were a celebrity chef. As I nibbled on whatever detritus I could scrounge in the dark, this insufferable creep was living a life of unrepentant malfeasance. While his actions bore no obvious clues to his intentions, I sensed that all of this poncing about was in aid of some greater scheme, something cunning beyond conception. One morning, he entered the men's room and announced his arrival by tapping his ring finger against the urinal closest to the door. This was becoming something of a regular occurrence, for in return for my company, I would be rewarded with some kind of snack, often corn chips or chunks of chocolate bars, which he'd dropped down into the urinal hole. While I was of no use to him, I felt as if he were attempting to procure my trust, and it wasn't until this occasion that I realized why.
"I've got some very special news," he said, voice dancing pleasantly. "You'll be glad to hear that 1494 Seneca will be completed just hours from now."
The imposter lowered himself onto the tiles, produced a Snickers bar from his pocket, and delicately unwrapped it.
"I suppose that's not the only reason for my present mood. An office can do funny things to one's spirits."
I listened intently as the plastic rustled in his hands. Where was this leading? Perhaps some kind of confession? Or yet another attempt at subterfuge?
"I've had many jobs over the years. They come and go like the seasons of the year. But there's something about this one which is beckoning me to stay. You see, I have something of a confession to make. Please excuse the forwardness of this, but I don't see any other way to proceed."
The imposter shifted his gaze down the plug hole.
"I've got these feelings, you see. Pleasant feelings. It appears that I've developed something of a workplace crush on you."
With a sheepish smile, he blushed.
"I know it's unusual. I'm out here and you're in there. But be that as it may, it turns my job into a joy. So I suppose my question to you is, how would you feel if I said that what I'm looking for isn't merely contractual, but, well, more of a full-time arrangement?"
My insides swirled, and the hair all over my body stood upright. Chilled to my very core, I could offer no reply other than a prolonged croak, a sickly gasp like that of a death rattle.
"Wait, don't answer that."
He rose to his feet.
"In situations like this, actions are so much more meaningful than words."
The man loosened his belt buckle, and his trousers flopped to the floor. I hardly had time to contemplate what was happening before I witnessed his hand running up and down the shaft of his erect penis. The walls creaked as he pressed himself against the tiles, his glistening knob descending the porcelain and making its way through the urinal hole.
"It's all right now," he cooed,
cock dancing expectantly on the tip of my nose.
"Don't be shy."
It was in this moment that I realized I could move the goalposts, that I could seize a new opportunity, run it up the flagpole and hit the ground running. I'd give him everything he wanted. I'd suck him off right there through the urinal and empty him out onto the men's room floor. I'd siphon his semen, organs, bones, and blood and shit it back out onto the tiles. Hot brown bile and sizzling stomach acids, organs tugging on muscle, tissue, veins, and nerve endings, then femurs, humerus, mixed phalanges, and pieces of the spine that ejaculate fluid, his whole form transposed, evacuated until he was nothing more than a pile of steaming hot offal with an inverted skin suit on top. I'd peel that skin suit from the floor and climb inside, catch a bus to a populated gym where I'd work out, chat to men and women, wine them, dine them, 69 them, as my own weeping boner twitched beneath his jaundiced foreskin. I gulped down his cock and bit it with all the force I could muster. The rogue screams filled the crawl space, my molars clamped down against his flesh, and in lieu of words, I heard the frantic pounding of fists against the wall. A new torrent funneled from the urinal, this one sticky and viscous. Growling, I thrashed my head about as my throat was coated with a bitey metallic flavor. Suddenly, light blinked back through the urinal, and there came a sound of confusion as his shoes hurried their way across the tiles, in a dance of panicked squeaks. Before long, a gentle draft filled the void. On hands and knees, I crawled through the unfamiliar passages, in pursuit of this cool air, until at last I saw the light, the crumbling mouth overlooking the emergency stairwell. Splayed amongst the rubble and the dust was the rogue, his trousers wrapped around his ankles, white shirt spattered with red from the bloody nub between his legs. I lowered myself from the crawl space and saw several sheets of plyboard strewn at his side. In his final moments, he'd returned to free me, but this was not an act of benevolence. One of his hands, wet and contracted, pointed in the direction of the fifth floor. I crawled up the stairs and slinked my way down the aisles, eyes weeping as they reacquainted themselves with the radiant office lights. Dragging my atrophied legs, I squirmed along the carpet until I felt the reassuring familiarity of my desk. Clambering into my chair, I booted up my terminal and loaded the final spreadsheets of 1494 Seneca. So I'm up on the sixth floor now. After all my hard work and contributions, the project managers decided to honor me with a promotion. I've got my very own office now, with a view of the city. But I won't get too comfortable, because I've got a job to do, and it's just as well. Rumors are spreading about another restructuring, and people are getting nervous. Tonight, even though I'm not entirely conscious of it yet, I'm going to stay behind. I'll wait until everybody leaves, and I'll enter the men's room. I've been thinking about the domed grate on the urinal closest to the door. I'll swipe it and take it back to my desk, where I'll place it over my gums like a mouth guard, and I'm some sucker-lip deformity who survived birth and aged. I'll collect cockroaches, gnats, and blowflies, and sew them to my skin. I'll leap from desk to desk, steal red correction pens, and I'll snap them in half, drain out the ink, and boil it. Then I'll pour the ink into my eyes to dye them, and I'll be nocturnal. I'll climb up the wires of the elevator shaft to hang there like a bat, and it'll work, you'll see. In the central business district, the company headquarters have 20 floors, and I'm making my way up all of them.